Beyond the Lamplight both starts and ends this podcast.
Yes, they do.
Indeed. Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Those Rules Don't Apply to Us, the podcast. My name is Mackenzie Mackinich, and this is...
Andy Gates.
Hello, sir. Good to see you today.
Good to see you.
Splendid. Let's talk a little bit about Tom Morello today. And It's a good topic to bring up because both of us are still a little salty because the news came out recently that, once again, Rage Against the Machine has, you know, broken up and are not going to be outperforming. This makes us both angry for a lot of reasons.
The bitch is bitched out.
I won't say that. Those are your words. However, neither of us have ever seen Rage Against the Machine, which I think a lot of our listeners would be very, very surprised to hear that based on all the shows we've been to. Me personally, I've had tickets 5 different times throughout my life since 1999 to see them. Every single one of them got canceled. The first one was all the way back when they were supposed to tour with the Beastie Boys.
I had tickets to 4 of them on their most recent tour, which didn't last long, but I missed 4.
Yeah. And, you know, I made a post about it, and I don't mind saying it publicly. Like, look, stay in separate hotels, take separate vans to the show, stay in separate green rooms, go up there, make a shit ton of money playing songs that you love. Your fans will go berserk and make them very happy. This isn't very complicated.
Like, no, fuck them. Seriously, make them all ride in the same van, and I'm all in the same hotel room. And then they can really fucking rage because they'll be really fucking angry.
Perhaps.
You know, and then when we go up there and, you know, we all attack them for being bitches, you know, they're like, huh, maybe we deserve that.
Well, regardless, we both want them to play.
Grumble, grumble.
Fair. So anyway, we're both clearly a little grumpy about that still. And we thought, well, we have had good experiences, though, seeing Tom Morello. So why don't we launch into that? Because, Tom, if you're listening, if you haven't turned it off already by now, we do actually love you. You're one of the greatest guitarists in history. And we have a lot to say about seeing Tom Morello live.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this one is going to be on October the 18th, 2018, at the Crocodile in Seattle. For me personally, I've seen Tom Morello a lot through the years leading up to that. The first time I saw him was in 2008 in South by Southwest, which was pretty amazing. He was playing a solo show at a kind of a small venue down at South by Southwest. I'm going to say it held 400 people maybe at most. I was up towards the front because, of course, I was. And then towards the end of the show, he goes, "Oh, I'd like to bring up my friend to play a few songs with me. Please welcome Ben Harper." So now I'm 15 feet away from Ben Harper and Tom Morello, which was a pretty amazing experience. And nice. Later that year, I saw him at, I think it was the Showbox or the Paramount or something like that, like the night before Obama got elected. So I've seen him a lot. Most of the times I've seen him, it's been acoustic. But this was a bit different.
First time I got to see him, he did a guest appearance at Springsteen's show in Anaheim. And he performed guitar solo and actually sang half the lyrics on The Ghost of Tom Joad, a song that Tom covered of Bruce's after that.
Yeah.
And it was, his solo was crazy. I mean, you go to a Bruce show, you're used to a couple chords on guitar and a typical solo, but you got Tom Morello doing wizardry with the goddamn guitar.
Literally wizardry.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, I got goosebumps right now. I'm like, holy shit.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. And then
sure would be great to see that with Rage, wouldn't it? Anyway, yeah. Back to that.
Rage is the opener.
Go on, I'm sorry.
No, that's quite
still
all right.
Pissed off.
Yeah, no, fair enough. You know, and then there was a 2012 tour where I think Miami Steve kind of dropped out and Tom Morello did the whole tour with them. And I saw a bunch of shows on that tour and that was fun.
Yeah. Did you ever see him like acoustic as a Night Watchman or any of those?
Did not.
Okay.
I had the chance to. So this was the first Tom Morello that I saw.
Yeah. So I had seen him as the Night Watchman at the Crocodile before. This was the old Croc back before they did the remodel. So so because of that, for this one, I actually had said, well, I'm not going to go to the show because I've seen Tom Morello solo acoustic before. It was kind of expensive and It was at the Croc. So in my mind, I was like, I've seen that show. Come day of show, a good friend of ours, Michael Wansley, hit me up and he's like, hey, I got an extra ticket. You know, do you want to come? And I was like, I'll go see Tom Morello for an extra ticket, of course. Yeah. So I did. And oh my God, am I glad that I did, because what we experienced.
It was not an acoustic show.
It was not an acoustic show.
And it was oddly the only seated show I've ever experienced at the Croc.
And for Tom Morello, no less. Yeah,
absolutely.
Very bizarre.
You know, we show up and we got there kind of late, I think. We actually were either in the last row or second to last row.
Yeah, which is rare for us, but there wasn't really much of a choice. There was no leapfrog in that one and moving up, quote, asterisk, at least early in the show.
Correct.
Yes. Geez, things that I can remember from that. So yeah, like you said, it was kind of weird. He wasn't doing acoustic. He was kind of almost just doing more like being interviewed and talking about his career. You know, like he had a new EDM album coming out and he played some tracks off of that.
I think the other thing he did too, though, is I think he honestly had sort of, he just put up photographs of different points and phases of his life.
He did.
And then he'd pull out, it was almost all electric, if I recall correctly. He'd pull an electric guitar and then play a song that kind of referenced or, you know, kind of described in more detail what that photo was about.
Yeah, and he was also doing kind of like guitar demos, I guess you would say.
Yeah,
he was playing along to his own music. And but like, so it was like a backing track, but then he was playing the guitar live right there. So it was almost like you were like in a recording studio or something like that.
Yeah.
Which was freaking, you know, just, it still sounded great, even though there was no bass player or drummer there or anything. I also remember he said some pretty heartfelt things about Chris Cornell. And, you know, Cornell's from here and they were in a band together with Audioslave. And I also remember during one of the solos of one of the songs, you know, he flipped the guitar up to play it with his teeth. And on the back of the guitar, it said Cornell Forever in gigantic letters. And that, of course, just made the whole crowd go crazy, as it should. Yeah. You know, so very smart move on his part, but, you know, a touching move at that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. You know, he did all this, like you said, the wizardry stuff, lightning fret walking, DJ scratching, just he did what Tom Morello does.
That's the best way to describe it. And I do recall, I think it was with Audioslave, on the LP and the CD, it said, there's no synthesizers or any sort of keyboards or anything. This is a guitar, a bass, drums, and a singer. And to hear some of those sounds that came out of some of those Audioslave albums, I'm like, wizardry. Seriously, it's crazy.
Yeah.
They wanted to make it clear that there was no modification. This was them plugged into, you know, some pedals and an amp and fucking go.
And like is mentioned, like it was basically like a demo show. And he showed us how he did it. Like, look, this is the pedal that I used for the song. Here's how I did it. And we went, oh, like, yeah.
Still could never do that. But no. Thanks.
I mean, I can't play any guitar at all other than bass a little bit. But yeah. So, no, we cannot do that. There's only one Tom Morello. So it gets to be time for the end of the show, and here's where things went sideways in a very, very good way.
Yeah, I mean, this show is like any other show. You know, towards the end, there's an encore, and typically, you know, it's their greatest hits or their greatest hit. Very few bands will lead with it, and the ones that do, good on you. But this one, I mean, I think during most of the performance, I don't think there were any Rage songs.
Oh, there were. Yeah, okay. I remember that.
I don't recall.
Okay. Yeah.
Fair. You know, but we were there for Killing in the Name. We just were. That had to be the finale.
Yeah.
It just had to be.
How could he not play that, right?
Exactly. So, you know, I took a gamble. In my head, I just had a notion. I'm like, he's like, hey, I got one more song. And as soon as I heard those words, I got out of the seat and I started working my way forwards.
Yeah, we both.
And I think we had a jump on most of the people who, you know, lemmings were just, we can't get out of our seats, you know. And as we're getting closer, even if we were just up by the stage and, you know, everyone's standing and rocking, so like a GA floor, you know, cool, we're closer, this would be cool. But as we're getting closer and closer to the stage, Tom Morello waves people, it's like, come on up.
Yeah, it's like, I want people on the stage.
You know, and the timing was perfect. I mean, there was no one in front of us. I just, you know, threw my leg over the stage. You know, I don't know if you went around or you came where I did. You might have gone up the stairs. I forget. But people,
I think I went up the stairs.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. I just threw my leg over and shit, here we are on stage. You know, we're shit, it's far from me to you from Tom Morello.
Yeah.
And he starts playing Killing in the Name of, and it's just.
And it piled up by then. I mean, there were a lot of people on that stage, like probably 40 to 50 people.
That's about how many seats there were. I honestly think everyone who was in there almost, except maybe most the motherfuckers people. Who were right in front of Tom.
Yeah.
Like, you know, on the front kind of row, those are the only ones who didn't, but yeah.
Don't blame them, but yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
So here we are. Now we're he launches into Killing in the Name of, and we were the singers, you know, of everybody on the stage, and he's just going into it and going into it, and we're taking video, we're taking photos, we're just like, oh my God, we're on stage with Tom Morello, and we're screaming the lyrics, and we're jamming, we're kind of like Zach De La Rocha the best we could, and yeah. And then it gets to the part of the solo and the, you know, fuck you, I won't do what you tell me, fuck you, I won't do what you, it starts to build up the build up. As the stage was in Seattle and it's mostly white people, they they screwed it all up. They went into the solo way too early of, fuck you, I won't do what you tell me, while it was still crescendo building up.
And they had no rhythm. They couldn't stay on time. No. It just was what it was.
But we knew the part and we killed it. We went in and there's lots of video about that out there.
No, it's really good. And there's a t-shirt that an artist that I really like, Will Varley, and it says, we are here, this is happening now.
Mm.
And that is about be here, be there, and appreciate what you're getting. And I needed to take a couple of photos to document it. And I took a snippet of video, you know, kind of looking at Tom. And then I turned it on us while we're singing one of the choruses.
Smiles ear to ear.
Oh my God, ridiculous. You know, and I look back on it and I say, and I look at that video, I said, God, I wish I had more of that video, but I don't. Yeah. We were in the moment.
Yeah.
I got what I wanted. And now phone's in fucking pocket. Let's yell.
Yeah. Let's rock. I took like a 1 minute clip and that's all I needed. Because like that takes me right back to the moment.
Absolutely.
That's it. You know, it's not good video. It's not good audio quality. But like
don't give a flan. Frick about that.
Yeah. Killing in the name of. Killing in the name of. Do what they told you. Fuck you, I won't do what you tell me. Fuck you, I won't do what you tell me. Fuck you, I won't do what you tell me. Fuck you, I won't do what you tell me. Fuck you, I won't do what you tell me. So he did that, and then he also did This Land Is Your Land, mm-hmm. and he insisted that everybody on the stage and the entire venue jump up and down nonstop the whole time, which, you know, you're old, so that was a struggle for you, you know, doing the – and you're kind of fat. So, you know, jumping up and down like that
and you're white and you don't have any rhythm, so
– But I can jump.
You were offbeat, though.
I might have been offbeat, but I can still jump. Not real high. Not real high.
That's not jumping.
I jumped. There's video of it because the video's all shaky. It's terrible.
You blame the video guy, yeah. Right.
Yeah. So that was it. You know, those two songs, and then we're just like, holy hell, thank you, Tom. Give him a little pat on the shoulder, and cool for him, you know, to be able to do that. Like he felt comfortable enough to have 50 people surround him. He told security, "Don't worry about it. This is before COVID times, so there was no worries about, you know, diseases or being sick or whatever." And yeah, another night we'll never forget. And that was one of those two that, you know, you and I talk about it of like you get the buzz from the big shows.
It's the I'm not going to sleep tonight buzz.
Yeah, where the adrenaline is just like through the absolute roof afterwards. And
yeah, to your point, I'm just pulling up the Facebook post I made later that night. I don't know what time. It was probably home. Like, I'm not going to sleep tonight. Holy hell. I was on stage singing Killing in the Name of with Tom Morello. That happens. I'll post more tomorrow. Right now on Cloud 9. 10? Fuck it. This shit goes to 11. I only get slept that night.
I posted a very similar words. I pretty much just said that, like, you know, afterwards we were buzzing in a way you can't explain, and I still am, and there's no way I'm going to sleep tonight. And so if there's people out there that don't understand what that's like, I'm sorry for you. But I hope you find that kind of a high somewhere else, and not necessarily through drugs, but, like, And there's probably people listening like, what do you mean? Like, you just were so hyped after a show, you couldn't go to sleep. Like, it's like just being on like a drug high.
It's an adrenaline rush.
Yeah.
Man. I mean, it was, I mean, Tom Morello, I mean, he's one of the best, you know, electric guitar players on planet Earth. And we were on fucking stage kind of yelling behind him.
And like junkies do, you know, you want the next hit, you want the next fix. And that's why we go to so many shows, because there's always hope that we're going to have that moment and that feeling like that when we leave. And it usually doesn't happen most shows we go to, but it happens more often than it probably does for most people.
Fair enough. And just to tease a little bit, I mean, we've been discussing what kind of shows will qualify to make it on this podcast and whatnot. And I'm not going to say any, but there's a lot of shows on there. We couldn't go to sleep after.
Oh, yeah. Many.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You know,
and I'm okay with that.
Yeah, me too. We're texting each other like 3-4 in the morning. We're like, still not asleep?
Yeah. I have a habit of calling my cousin, like, well, she goes to sleep really early, but in the middle of the night for her, and just leaving these voicemails of, you wouldn't believe what I just saw. And she actually loves those voicemails. And I wonder if she's actually saved them. Maybe we'll put some of them on this podcast. Another thing I'd like to bring up about that is, for me, is, you know, to think that I almost skipped that show because, you know, in quotation marks, I'd seen Morello before.
Yeah.
And so I, that night I relearned a huge lesson of like, go to the show, because that's a big one. Why would I ever skip Tom Morello? You know, because I want to save some money, or because like I'm tired. Like,
I'm guessing,
who gives a shit?
Yeah, I'm guessing it's the brain damage you have.
Perhaps it's
that's what someone with brain damage would say.
It's one of the few things I won't argue with you. Yeah, there's a bit of that. Yeah. And you know what? Again, so thank you to Michael Wansley for helping me get into that show and convincing me to go. One thing that I remember I did write back at the time when that happened was, and this was just a direct quote from my Facebook post, was, Michael Wansley, since you made fun of the Yankees tonight, I'm going to rub it in and tell you all about this experience and you since you left early. Because he left before the show was over. To have, you know, which number, that's another cardinal rule. You never leave before a show is over unless you're like, you know, extremely sick or your house is getting robbed or something, but
maybe with a low grade fever or something like that.
Oh, I can't wait to argue about that. It's okay. Never happened. But anyway, and a couple other things I wanted to mention that I had posted that night was that show tonight made, I wrote that show tonight made the Red Sox making it to the World Series a little less painful. So that has to be special if that was able to help me out. And I also wrote hashtag let there be rock and hashtag fuck the Red Sox, which I stand by wholly, both of those statements.
Absolutely. And you may have felt good for a minute or two, but the Red Sox won the World Series, like literally like the next week. So fuck the Yankees.
I had a good moment for that night. So, yeah.
You guys haven't had a good year since. So here we are.
We've had 27 good years compared to what?
Since.
10? That's nice. That's cute.
Google that shit.
It's cute.
Google that shit.
Yeah. 10's nice. It's okay. Solid right. Number. Yeah. Anyway, Tom, thank you for saving me that night. Buddy, go do a raid show. We need it. We still love you anyway. You're one of the greatest guitarists ever.
Yep. Absolutely. What a night.
Yeah. Okay. Well, time to transition to another show review. This one is from a band called The Stripes, which a lot of our audience might not be aware of, and not to be confused with The White Stripes. This band was Stripes. This show was on March 27th, 2014 at the Crocodile, and this might have been one of the very first like big shows, at least, that you and I had ever been to together since our friendship. One of the more memorable ones that I at least remember. I know we saw some shows together back then.
Yep.
But do you want to talk about these kids a little bit?
Yeah. I mean, they're kids. They're actual kids from Ireland. They formed in 2010. I mean, their ages at the time, they were 2 15-year-olds, a 14-year-old, and a 13-year-old. In 2011, they recorded their first EP titled Young, Gifted, and Blue, and it actually topped the iTunes blues charts. When I do the math for that, there's 2 16-year-olds, a 15-year-old, and a 14-year-old who are topping iTunes blues charts.
Yeah, and they got Elton John's attention even like very quickly.
Very at that quickly, young age. They scooped him right up. I mean, yeah. Ultimately, he got them to sign to Elton John's management company. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And then the record that kind of really made it out there was Snapshot. Some blues covers, a lot of original stuff, and a little bit more rock and roll than just straight kind of blues covers. You know, and I think about it, that LP came out in 2013, which is a year after the first EP. I mean, shit. At that point, there are two 18-year-olds, a 17-year-old, and a 16-year-old.
Yeah.
They're touring the world. You know, they got Elton John as a manager. Let's be clear, at that age, I hadn't even really mastered masturbating, and these motherfuckers are out there killing it with music. And Mac and I could disagree on this one. I think that's why we chose this one to end the night. But
to a degree, I think there's actually a lot that we will agree on for this when we kind of look back and reflect on it. You were the one, though, that started sounding the alarm, and you reached out to all your friends. Like, you Anybody. Have to come see this show.
Because I don't pull that card often, but yeah. When I do, I hope everyone who knows me and, like, knows me enough for me to tell them to fucking go there.
And both. And just this is – that's something there. We've proven with all of our friends a lot. Like, look, if me or Andy says you have to be at a show, just and especially go. If both of us say
–
if both of us say you really have to drop what you're doing and come.
Get your ass there.
We know what we're talking about.
Yeah, exactly. And right? That's the – you know, you got to get your ass out there. I mean, I get it.
Yeah. So this show was very, very hyped. I mean, they had just been on literally the David Letterman show just days earlier, like I think earlier in the week or something like that. And here they were playing at the Crocodile. So yeah, the show happens. You had piled a ton of friends to go into it. I don't remember. There's some things that I do remember. I mean, obviously I didn't know the songs very well, but there were like some Bo Diddley covers. And like, I remember they ended with Louie Louie. I looked back just because I didn't completely remember it. They played 16 songs in less than an hour. I mean, that's rock and roll.
Yeah, absolutely.
For sure. And yeah. And it was impressive. I can't take that away in any way, shape, or form.
It wasn't just blues covers at that point. They're hitting it. They're, I mean, even if it was a blues cover, they kind of turned it into some punk shit, you know, and rock and roll. Yeah, it's fantastic. And again, they're kids.
Yeah.
Holy shit. I'm pretty sure the underwear I was wearing that day was older than them.
Oh, I would agree for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's like, fuck. And I'm blown away by them.
Yeah.
My Facebook post that day, and this is, you know, mine was, I said, man, that was awesome. Stripes. And then that just kind of summed it up. It wasn't one of those I got a buzz or anything, but I was like very, very impressed with these young men.
Yeah. Yeah, the guitarist I was extremely impressed with. That kid could play. And, you know, I kept just waiting, like, go into a big solo. It's like, I know he can do it. But for the kind of music they played, like, that's just not what it was for, and I get that.
Right.
I remember thinking that the singer was good, not an incredible singer, but he was a good front man, and, you know, he captured the stage very well.
Yeah. He did that well. He played a good blues harp.
And again, for their ages, very, very well.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then, like you said in pre-production, where I wrote a half of a novel, so I'm going to read what my analysis was for that night, and it is quite a bit. So I
voted for a word limit on this portion of the show. I just want it to be noted on the record. Continue.
Well, it was an electoral college. The popular vote didn't matter in this, just like, you know, the dumbass electoral college we have in this country. I wrote that for kids, they tore it up. There are probably very few, if any, teenage, you know, 16 to 18-year-old rock bands out there with that much skill, persona, unity, and stage presence already. However, I said that there is certainly hype, but I think that's about all that it is. I said that overall, I thought the band was incredibly well-tight and well-polished for their ages especially. But about five songs in, I felt like I had pretty much seen the whole show. Each song basically had the same formula, just different riffs. They had a hell of a platform set, for sure. But I felt like they would need to expand on it if they wanted longevity as a band. And, you know, sure, there were bands like AC/DC that were similar, but AC/DC were probably a bit more diverse even in those early days. And I wrote that I think the Stripes will get probably pretty boring pretty quickly if they don't change things up, and soon, maybe a one-hit album for sure if not. The last paragraph, and we're rounding third, I'm almost there, and I see your head ready to explode over there. And I wrote, don't get me wrong, I was incredibly impressed. And I want to make that very clear, I was. But only because of how young they were. And if they were 25, I probably would have said something like, that band was kind of like Jet 13 years ago, though maybe a little bit better. Nothing special. I can say that I've seen them now, but nothing less. Unless something drastically changes, I don't see myself forking over money to see them again in the next 4 to 5 years, unless something drastically changes or that guitarist progresses a lot.
You said a lot of words.
I did. Those were a lot of words.
Yeah, you went over. There's a fine coming your way.
Okay.
And you'd have been wrong for not seeing him again, quite honestly. they were still a really good band, and they were young, mm-hmm. and they're still learning sort of stuff. But, you know, I saw them, shit, I don't know, 4 times, and I think they only played in the U.S. like 5, and I made it to most of them.
Yeah.
I mean, they're just great.
And it's okay. Like, it touched you, and it didn't grab me, you know.
I get it.
I didn't trash on them or anything like that.
Yeah, right. You know.
Now, where things got went a little sideways was in the comments of that conversation, because, yeah, you know, you said, oh, it's way too many words, blah, blah, blah. And then you said that John Grandy and I, our opinions didn't matter because we liked bands like the Black Keys anyway. To which John Grandy took a shot at you and said, a fan of Kiss has no right to take shots at the Black Keys ever.
Yeah, wait, which band is in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame? Of the two that we're, you know, comparing here?
They're too young. The Black Keys didn't put out an album in time, so they're not even eligible.
Yeah, and they won't make it.
Perhaps.
$5 wager.
I already owe you $5 for some other bet.
Come on. You get a chance to win it back or double down.
We'll continue on.
Oh, so you got a little lippy action. Right there. Trying to put your money where your mouth is.
Yeah. And that whole conversation actually ended with you calling me an asshole. And me and John Grandy both assholes.
I'm not wrong.
And you know what? I wasn't wrong either. I pretty much nailed my analysis. The band broke up in 2018. They never really evolved much more from what they were back then, which is a shame because I actually would have liked to see it. I was championing them.
You're missing the important part, that you are, in fact, an asshole.
That's not true. That is not a fact.
Totally true.
Not a fact.
Yep.
That's just like, you know, your opinion, man. It's not a fact.
It says it in my phone.
That's fake news, too.
It's really not. All right, to move along from this bickering.
Yes.
I think we're still angry about the whole Rage Against the Machine
thing. Yeah, I think so, too.
There we are.
But you did see them more, and you actually had some really cool experiences that I would love to hear you talk about with the Stripes.
You know, it was pretty good. So the show we saw at the Croc, as it was in March of 14, and, you know, shit, I had known about them for a couple of years, and they were coming over to the U.S., and their first show was at the Troubadour on the Sunset Strip in L.A., and I'm like, I got to go down to that. I have to go. And I went. Troubadour, I don't know, holds 400 or 500 people. Not a really big
it's
room.
It's small, yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty small. And it turns out that Elton John was in the room, you know. And again, I don't know how you know, but holy shit, you know Elton John's in the room because there's a buzz. Everyone's looking up, doing the thing. And
I think you would notice the flamboyancy. And you could probably tell that he's there. I mean, the glasses, the hat, I mean. Yeah, probably.
Are you knocking flamboyancy?
Probably really difficult to notice him, I'm sure. You know, nothing gets by you, Andy.
No, fair enough.
So anyway, he was in the room.
Yeah, he's in the room, and they played, you know, a good set. I really liked it. Shit, I'm in LA on the Sunset Strip. I mean, this is a good day for me. And then sort of along the lines of, you know, those rules don't apply to us. You know, show is over. Elton John, of course, left early. He didn't want the mad crush of everyone trying to get out of the venue. And the security whisked him out, I'm sure, and he was out. And then I kind of saw where the green room was. You actually had to go up like 2 flights of stairs. And I just walked out of the, you know, the music space and I see the staircase and I just walked right towards it. And there's a big security guy wearing all black standing right there. Looked him in the eye, said, hey, and walked right past him. He didn't say shit. And up the top of the landing is another security guy dressed all in black. You know, I did the same thing. Looked him in the eye the whole way up. Gave him a wave. Just walked right past him.
Definitely sure that Elton John was not there because they would have.
Oh yeah. I got tased.
Beaten the yes.
Yeah. Don't tase me, bro.
Which would have been awesome to see, but yeah.
Not to feel, but yes.
Yeah.
I understand your point. And I get into the green room and I realize, like, holy shit. I have no business being here. I was the only non-good friends and family people in there.
Yeah.
You know, probably wearing shorts, looking like I do.
Probably. In there, yeah.
You know, and I'm like, shit, I got to lay low. You know, I can't be all busting through being a dick. I mean, that space wasn't meant for me.
Yeah.
I was supposed to be there, and it was for friends and family, and I was very respectful. I think there are, you know, some beers. I might have had one or two, but I kind of kept to myself. And then as time went on, you know, all their friends and family, I'd talked to them already and kind of, well, you know, the individual band members are kind of standing there by themselves. So I went up there and said hi. I took a couple pictures with them, and I'll try to find those and we'll post them on our website. But It's another example of I just kind of ignored security, you know, and they kind of let me in, and it was super cool. Portland, I forget the date of the show, but my oldest child, Jessie, you know, she kind of liked them. I always, you know, played music in the car and whatnot, and it was kind of a band she liked, and it was sort of a dad and daughter adventure. We went down there, we found a really good burger in Portland, and we went to the show. The show had really bad sound issues. It wasn't the best show at all. The sound issues sucked. The band got mad at the sound guy. They walked off stage. They came back later. Suffice to say, at the end of the show, this is kind of where those rules don't apply to me, but I didn't do anything. You know, show's over, they're trying to clear out the music venue space, and then there's sort of like an entryway space out there, and Security's like, everybody out, everybody out. Like, if you're not with the band, you got to go out there. And the guy points to me and says, you're with the band, you're good. Mac touched upon it in a previous episode. You know, generally speaking, if someone makes a statement or asks a question at a show, the answer is usually yes.
Yeah.
Lead with yes and go with it. I'm like, yeah. I mean, I'm wearing cargo shorts. You know, I've got a black hoodie on. Christ, I could have been their tour manager, roadie, whatever it was. And I'm standing out there for a while, and ultimately the band members started coming out. And this was a hastily put together kind of short 5-show tour. So there wasn't a whole lot of promotion, whatever, and there weren't posters. And I, you know, I'm addicted to collecting posters, and there was one in the room. And the guitar player, Josh, came out, and I was like, hey. And I said, hey, great show, yada, yada, yada. I'm like, there's a poster over there. Could you maybe go grab that for me? And he was such a nice kid. Of course, Jesse was now out sort of in the lobby area. Yes, I left the 14-year-old at the time out there. Like, no, like, don't leave the space. No,
hi, Joanne.
That's how they sell the merch and all that shit. So, yeah. But he went and got the poster. Not only he did that, I'm like, it's for my daughter. He's like, what's her name? Like, it's Jessie. Like, how old is she? He's like, all right. He went and got the poster. Not only did he do that, he went backstage and got every band member to sign it.
Cool.
And he came back out to find me in the space. And I'm like, yeah. He's like, no, where's your daughter? I'm like, she's out there. He's like, well, I want to give it to her. So took a, you know, he just went out of his way to just be a super nice kid. I think he was 18. Jesse thought it was cute. Sorry, Jess. And yeah, nice kid. I enjoyed that experience too. And I didn't break any rules, but you're with the band. Yes.
Yeah. Right place at the right time.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And you had another story, I think, about a drummer with the Stripes. Is that right?
Yeah, same run, I think it was. In
keep them rolling, bud. These are good.
Vancouver, B.C. It was the last of their short little U.S. run. I really think they only did the one. They did a few shows on the West Coast. And was up in Vancouver, B.C., and the show started. They were playing. And about 7 songs in, the drummer just threw his sticks down and got up and walked off stage. It turned out he had been diagnosed with strep throat either the night before or that day and tried to give it a go. And he's like, fuck this. You know, he kind of walked off. And then the other 3 guys in the band, now there's just going to be guitar, bass, singer, harmonica.
Yeah.
It's kind of hard to pull off a blues set, you know, without some drums. Not impossible.
Yeah.
Not impossible.
I mean, they did it in the old days, but that's not what they're ready and used for.
Yeah, exactly.
Of course.
And so they tried to play a couple of improvised blues cover songs that, you know, kind of crap. And finally, they're just like, does anybody in here play drums? And you hear a voice from behind and an arm go up. And they're like, really? They're like, yeah. He's like, you know blues standards? He's like, yeah. So they brought him up. In my Facebook post, it's his name is Dave. And Dave saved the show. They ended up playing 6 or 7 blues standard covers, and Dave fucking killed it.
Way to go, Dave.
He doubled the damn number of songs we got. Again, of the Stripes shows I saw, two of them, you know, sound issues and whatnot, the drummer. I still stand by it, man. Holy shit. They were kids.
Yeah.
They're kids.
And even that kid that jumped in was a kid too,
yeah,
right?
Like the Dave. Photo. Yeah, absolutely, Dave.
Yeah. Dave, if you're out there, I hope send us a message through Facebook or we'd love to see your post about all this.
Thanks, Dave. I guess the only thing I kind of regret about it all is I should have bought larger shirts of theirs. Those ones don't quite fit anymore.
It's funny because,
we don't want to upset DeAndre.
I was definitely not going to bring him into that.
I got him.
Oh, that jacket of hate is sweating right now. And there's only about five people on the planet that understands what this means. Great. Thanks for sharing those stories about those. Yeah, the kids were great. I'll never take that away from them. Absolutely. For sure.
Yeah.
And I'm glad I saw it. It was a great show.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And that's the podcast.
That was so white. Intermission is coming to a close. Better run back to your seat. We've been biding our time, looking for a rhyme that'll get you up on your feet.